You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't pass on the Savage Lovecast.
Here's something I've never done. Never occurred to me to do, wouldn't do it on a dare. Pound on someone's door at 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning to share the good news of the anal orgasm, or the conquerable gag reflex, or the scientifically proven benefits of indulging your partner's kinks. Thanks again to sex researcher Amy Muse for doing the science on good giving and game. I always had a hunch, but Professor Muse's research proved that people who fulfill their partner's reasonable slash doable fantasies, recognizing, of course, that reasonable and doable are relative terms, but those people report, quote, higher levels of daily sexual desire and were more likely to maintain their desire for their partner over time. So kind of like Jesus, good giving in game saves. In fairness to Jesus, he saves souls, which don't exist, while GGG saves relationships, which do. So GGG for the win there. Anyway, years ago, Jehovah's Witnesses started knocking on my door on Saturday mornings. Terry and I hadn't been together long, and we weren't parents yet, so we were still partying pretty hard on Friday nights and did not care for people banging on our door on Saturday mornings. But the first few times we were polite, we'd say, yes, we've heard of Jesus, and no thank you, we are not interested in Christianity generally, and in Jehovah's Witnessing in particular, as we are both big fans of Christmas and birthday parties. But they banged on our door again, a fourth Saturday in a row. And that morning, disgusted, I answered the door naked and screamed at them to leave us the fuck alone. Might have added something about being gay and having just fucked my boyfriend. Whatever it is I said that morning, naked at my front door, it worked. They never returned. And we must have gone on some shared database of hopeless reprobates, because we've never had a proselytizing, God-bothering, Bible-thumping, Christian, evangelical, conservative weirdo show up at our door again. Those long ago and oh so far away Jehovah's Witnesses came to mind as I was reading about John Allen Chau this weekend. Chau was the evangelical Christian missionary who showed up on the doorstep, actually the pristine beach, of an ancient tribe of hunter-gatherers who have lived undisturbed on an island in the Indian Ocean for thousands of years. Chau was so obsessed with bringing Christ Almighty to the heathens on North Sentinel Island that he snuck onto that island under cover of darkness. And he had to sneak onto that island because it's illegal for anyone who isn't a member of that tribe to set foot on it. The Indian Navy patrols the waters around the island to prevent anyone from actually getting there. And it's illegal for outsiders to step foot on this island because the tribe has no natural immunity to the diseases of the modern world. So an outsider could introduce a pathogen that could wipe this tribe out. Also, too, the tribe is known for being violently hostile to outsiders, and others who have landed on the island, mostly by accident, have been murdered. Chau made it onto the island twice. He cut his first visit short after a member of the tribe shot an arrow at him that pierced the Bible he had in his hand. Now, a reasonable person might have chalked that up to chance, but Chau, an unreasonable person, interpreted it to mean that God would protect him. Unlikely and untrue, as it turned out, but if you were the kind of person who needs to see God's hand in everything, maybe that arrow through the Bible was God giving Chau one last chance to get his unwelcome ass off that island. But he went back, and on his second visit, the islanders did what everyone warned Chau they would do. They killed him. And now American evangelical groups are calling on Indian authorities to retrieve Chau's body and bring his quote-unquote murderers to justice. Yeah, no. Chau's presence on that island itself was attempted murder, not just of a culture, but a threat to the lives of every member of that tribe. So his murder was an act of self-defense. The tribe was, now what's that phrase again, beloved by right-wing religious gun nuts everywhere? Oh, right, the tribe stood its ground. Say what you like about Chau. I'd say he was an idiot, selfish, self-centered, God-bothering narcissist. But there is biblical justification for what he was trying to do. Mark 16:15, go ye into the world and preach the gospel to every creature. There's no biblical justification, however, for what our government is doing to migrants at our southern border, where women and children who are legally requesting asylum in this country are being met with tear gas. The same evangelical groups demanding justice for Chau, actually, I'm going to digress here for a second, Chow, like those Jehovah's Witnesses at my door 20 years ago, was out there doing what? Recruiting. Something the gays never do, but evangelicals constantly accuse us of doing. Anyway, evangelical groups demanding justice for Chow are conspicuously silent on the abuse of refugees and immigrants at our border. Silent despite Matthew 25:42, for I was a foreigner and you took me in. And the punishment for not taking that foreigner in? Right from Jesus' mouth? Let me consult my notes here. Oh, right. Eternal punishment. Hell fire. Yeah, I know, I know. Not a new insight. I am not the first person to point out that evangelical Christians are pretty lousy Christians. Pro-gun, pro-Trump, pro-death penalty, pro-separating children from their parents. Remember when they were all about every child deserves a mother and a father? I do. They don't. But you know what? If they can't be bothered to at least pretend to believe the things their so-called Savior said, if they refuse to do what Jesus told them to do, why do we have to pretend to believe they're Christians at all? They're idiots. All of them. Evangelical, conservative, self-centered, selfish, narcissistic, God-bothering assholes, one and all. They, again, I'm talking about evangelical, conservative, right-wing Christians here, they need to stop waving their Bibles at hunters and gatherers and cocksuckers and buttfuckers and sit their asses down and read them instead. All right, coming up on today's show, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum and Micro editions of the Savage Lovecast, Stormy Daniels is here not to talk about him, not to talk about you-know-who, but to answer your sex questions and help me give you sex advice. Again, that's on the Magnum and the Micro edition, both of today's Savage Lovecast. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Away. Away makes first-class luggage at coach prices that allow you to charge your phone on the go. For $20 off a suitcase, go to awaytravel.com/savage and use the promo code SAVAGE. Get yourself a great new piece of luggage and help out the Savage Lovecast again by going to awaytravel.com/savage, promo code SAVAGE.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Do not wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am a cis female, heteroflexible from the West Coast, and I recently had my first dom sub experience. I met a guy through work, and he already has a primary partner in which he lives 100% dom sub all the time, and he doesn't consider her an equal. Of course, this is all consensual, but I have some trauma from my past with an abusive relationship, and so this kind of really bothers me. Like, I'm totally for them doing this, but it kind of scares me getting into the world of BDSM because I've always been interested in it, but I guess I'm afraid of not having my own agency. So yeah, what do you think? How do I get involved in it as someone who has experienced trauma and is still processing it?
I hope you're seeing a counselor or a therapist to work on the issues you have with your past experiences with trauma, because BDSM play is not therapy. Sometimes it gets talked about as if it is. There are a lot of people who find BDSM play to be very cathartic. There are lots of research papers that have been written that show that people who engage in consensual BDSM play are often psychologically healthier. And there are a lot of people in the scene and a lot of people outside the scene. A lot of people who do BDSM have past experiences with trauma and find BDSM play and the control it gives them, whether they're dom or sub, healing. But of course, there are a lot of people out there who have past sexual trauma who don't do BDSM play and don't need to do BDSM play. People who are attracted to BDSM should do it. Some people with past trauma find that doing BDSM, again, is cathartic and helpful, but it isn't therapy. Also, BDSM ain't abuse, and abuse ain't BDSM. You set up a false choice for yourself here. You can be involved with BDSM, or you can have your agency. And that's just false. You can do BDSM play where you have control, even as the sub, where you have agency, even as the sub, where you negotiate and agree to, consent to, a brief period of time where there is a power exchange that you can opt out of at any moment by deploying your safe word. Because this guy has a full-time sub and they're doing cops and robbers with their pants off 24 hours a day, doesn't mean that you have to do cops and robbers with your pants off 24 hours a day with him or anyone else. You can contain it. You can shape it. You can put a time limit on it. You don't have to, if you do it once, you don't have to do it always and forever with this guy or anyone else. So clearly you're uncomfortable with the idea of a 24/7 situation. If you're interested in playing with this guy who has a 24/7 sub and it's a consensual relationship and it's what they both want, make it clear to him that that is not what you want and you are not interested in a 24/7, 365 DS relationship or even around the clock DS encounter with him where he's in charge from the moment that you two meet up, that you want a defined beginning and end to your submission. And of course, you want a ripcord. You want that safe word that if you deploy it, it ends, it stops. And you should talk with him more. You should get a sense about whether you can trust him. You can also ask to talk to other subs he's played with. Maybe not the 24/7 sub that he's got at home, but other women, because clearly he's not in a monogamous committed relationship with his sub. He plays with other women. There are probably other women out there that he's played with for an evening. And you should ask if you can speak to one or two. And if they vouch for him and you're comfortable playing with him, go for it. But no more false choices. No more, oh my God, I can be involved in BDSM or I can have agency and control. You can be involved in BDSM as a sub and still have agency and control. The well-known, at this point, secret of a BDSM encounter is most of them are shaped by the sub's desires and the sub's wants. And in a way, the top is, despite what's being performed, despite what it may look like, the top is meeting the bottom's needs and hitting marks that the bottom laid out for the top and servicing the bottom and not the other way around. And if you speak with a guy who isn't interested in your needs, isn't interested in what you want out of an encounter or a BDSM experience, and is just, you know, clueless McDom stick up his ass and is only interested in doing what he wants to do and ordering you around, not the guy that you want to play with, not the style of BDSM that appeals to you, because that would require you to sacrifice your agency and make yourself vulnerable in a way that you are not willing to make yourself vulnerable. So pass on that guy. If he's that guy, and go find a guy who wants to negotiate a scene that works for you, that you're going to be comfortable relaxing during and performing submission. It really is a performance. It's theater. It's cops and robbers with your pants off and orgasms. It is not a door you walk through that you can only walk through one way and your agency is on one side and submission's on the other. It's not that.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 25-year-old bisexual woman that's got myself in a bit of a situation. About 3 months ago, I met this amazing girl. She's super sweet, and I really see a future with her. We both have come from very toxic relationships, so right now we're both not labeling the relationship at all. We're both emotionally invested in each other and want to give this relationship a label in the future when we're both comfortable. But we have also mutually agreed upon being physically open to others as long as we disclose prior to physicality. The problem is that I've also started talking to this kink couple, and I'd really like to pursue physical intimacy with them as their sub. With being their sub, I feel like the bond that I need with them would be very intimate as to why I feel like I have a problem. I feel like this relationship with these dogs would be too intimate, and she may not also be okay with me having that type of kink play with other people. I really don't want to screw up this relationship with this girl, but I feel a giant need to explore with this couple. My question is, would you deem the playtime that I'd have with this couple to be too intimate for my open relationship, or am I freaking out over nothing and I should just talk to her?
You ask whether I would deem the kind of kink play that you would have with this couple to be too intimate, and it's not relevant how I might deem it, how I might regard the degree of intimacy in that kind of encounter, or that kind of ongoing relationship with this kinky couple that you'd like to sub for. What matters is how this girl, this other woman, that you are involved with but not involved with, that it's only been 3 months, you both came out of toxic R, so you're not labeling it, you're not making any commitments, and you agreed that it was okay for you to pursue physical intimacy with others. It depends how she would regard it. And if she regarded that as a threat or a problem, if she disapproved of that kind of sex, then maybe she's not the right partner for you, because you obviously are very interested in kink, in some sort of DS power exchange encounter, multiple encounters with one person or a couple. That would be an ongoing connection. That would be, for lack of a better term, a relationship. So talk to this girl that you are dating, that you are contemplating getting serious about at some point down the road, about how she feels about kink, how she feels about BDSM or DS encounters, and whether she has a problem with that being an intrinsic aspect of your sexuality that you want to express, that you may need to express, so that you feel sexually fulfilled. When she said it was okay, when you both agreed that it was okay for you to have outside encounters with others, what did that mean? Did that mean only vanilla sex? Did that mean only one-offs? Did that mean you can't know their names? Does that mean when you're in different time zones? What does it mean? We're not having sex with anybody else, just us two. That means one thing, everybody gets it. We can have sex with other people is not the end of that conversation or that agreement. You have to keep talking about what you mean by sex, what I mean by sex, and whether sex can come bundled with intimacy, some form of romance or connection, kink. So, you ask me what I think. I think you need to talk to your girlfriend. That's what I think, because what she thinks is what matters. And if it's something you want and something you need, she may not be the right prospective partner for you in the future, which is all she is right now, someone you might date seriously down the road. Are you willing to pass on this opportunity to be with this couple in this way that you would like to be with them, because someone might want to commit to you at some indefinite point in the future? Something you might want to ask yourself. The holidays are the busiest time of the year, especially at the post office. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time during the hectic holiday season. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Post Office right to your desktop. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and your own printer. And then your U.S. Post Office mail carrier picks it up at your door. Print postage any day, anytime. Stamps.com not only saves you time, it saves you money. Stamps.com helps you print the right amount of postage every single time. You will never overpay again. With all the time and money you'll save, Stamps.com is the best gift you can give yourself this holiday season. And right now, you can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Savage. That's Stamps.com. Enter Savage.
Hey, Dan. Long-time listener and even long-time reader. I remember reading Savage Love way back when in Chicago, in the Chicago Reader. And my question isn't a relationship one. It's more about your approach to questions. I and some of my friends who are also fans have noticed that current Dan compared to Dan in the past seems to be a lot kinder and gentler in terms of your responses to questions and how you approach people as far as their letters and calls to the show are concerned. So my question is this, is this something that you've consciously done or is it just sort of crept up on you? Of course, you can completely disagree with me and think I'm way the fuck off base, but I'm just curious to see what you have to say about that.
I haven't made a conscious effort to be less of an asshole. Maybe it correlates strongly with marijuana becoming legal in Washington State in 2012. But I do think that there's a difference between getting a letter where people have to be short, they have to be succinct, I don't hear their voices, and getting a call. And I do think doing the podcast for the last 10 years has kind of reshaped my approach subconsciously, because it's harder to be just snarky or dismissive when you can hear real pain in someone's voice. It was easier to knock the letters around or be funny and dismissive when it was just a letter. It's harder to do that when you can hear someone's voice. There's an intimacy to someone being in your ears like that, and you feel more connected to them. And also, I call people back frequently. And I do think that the podcast changed a little bit the way I give advice. I'm still a snarky asshole. I haven't, of course, made any effort to shave the asshole edges off this asshole. But yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm a little bit less harsh, a little bit less snarky, a little bit less jokey. And I think it was this new format. I think it was taking calls, hearing people, listening to them, and sometimes calling them back that maybe resulted in my approach becoming a little bit kinder and a little bit gentler over the years. Although I did get a letter at Savage Love this morning asking me why I am such an asshole. So there's some people out there who don't see the kinder, gentler shit that you guys are seeing. Thanks to Away for supporting the Savage Love cast. Away makes affordable, high-quality suitcases that charge your phone. By cutting out the middleman, Away is able to offer the perfect luggage made with high-quality materials at a much lower price. It comes in a variety of colors and four sizes. The carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or the large. I travel light, so I got the carry-on, and it is gorgeous. The carry-on bags feature two USB ports and a high-capacity battery that allows you to charge multiple devices on the go. Phones, tablets, laptops. So you never have to worry about a dead phone or fight for an outlet at the airport. It's ultra durable, yet lightweight, and you get a smooth ride in any direction. Four 360-degree spinner wheels that won't get stuck or break. They're also theft-proof. There's a TSA-approved combination lock built in to keep your belongings safe. Even overpackers like me can fit everything they need into their Away luggage because they have an interior compression system that tightly buckles in even bulky items. Comes with a lifetime warranty. If anything breaks, Away will fix it or replace it for life. And they offer a risk-free 100-day trial period. If at any point you decide it's not for you, return it for a full refund, no questions asked. Plus, you get free shipping anywhere in the lower 48 states. So get yourself or someone you love some new luggage and let them know that the Lovecast sent you. Away has a special offer just for my listeners. For $20 off a suitcase, go to awaytravel.com/savage and use the promo code SAVAGE at checkout. Do it, please. It helps us out at the Lovecast, and it'll help you out at the airport the next time you need to charge something. If you're considering getting some new luggage anyway, get yourself some Away. That's $20 off a suitcase by going to awaytravel.com/savage and using the promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a mid-20s woman calling from the Midwest. So a few days ago, I went out with a guy. We got drinks, came back to my place, started rolling around a little bit. I was having a really good time. He couldn't get hard, but, you know, that was okay. That wasn't a big deal to me. I didn't care. There's plenty of things you can do without a hard dick. So I didn't, you know, I wasn't worried at all. But I could tell that he felt really bad about it. He was really self-conscious. He apologized a bunch. I made it really clear that I was having a good time. I didn't care. This didn't bother me. And I made sure he knew that. But then the next day I realized that, you know, I wasn't really interested in pursuing a romantic relationship with him. And so I was going to tell him, but then I thought, oh no, he might think that, like, I'm not interested in him because he couldn't get hard. And I didn't want him to think that because it wasn't true. There were other reasons. And so I decided that I would get dinner with him one more time. And then I would tell him, like, the next day or the day after that I wasn't interested in him. So he wouldn't think that I wasn't interested in him because he couldn't get hard. But I just had dinner with him tonight. And it felt really, you know, dishonest and genuine. And I really like being honest with people. And so I didn't like this feeling of, you know, I felt like I was kind of leading him on. And so I want your opinion about this. Did I do the right thing? You know, did I save him from his own self-consciousness by getting dinner with him? And then I'll tell him at a later time that I'm not interested in him and he won't think it's about the fact that he couldn't get hard. Or should I have been honest with him as soon as I knew, because it's better not to lead people on.
So Stormy Daniels, how far does a woman have to go to protect a man's fragile ego when his penis isn't concerned?
That's an interesting question. I think that you have to be careful when dealing with someone's self-esteem in such a sensitive area, like, you know. But I have to tell this young lady, first of all, I really admire her honesty with herself, and her compassion is very, you know, moving,
commendable.
Commendable. Like, that she was thinking about someone's feelings and went the extra distance to not mock him or flip it on herself and think, oh my God, his dick won't get hard. There's something wrong with me. Does he think I'm fat? Because that's where most chicks' brains go.
That's true. I get that question all the time from women who are like, he couldn't get hard, therefore I am not.
There's something wrong with
that.
Me. Is it something I look? Did I do something wrong? And I love how confident she is and that she understands that, like, sometimes it just doesn't work. You know, he was probably nervous. It could have been, I mean, it's any kind of thing.
The thing I wrote down listening to her was plenty of things you can do without a hard dick.
And that was, yes, that's what I was going to say. Like, how open-minded and like.
Well, she listens to my show.
That's true. but I was going to say that she messed up because she should have, everything she said to us just now, she should have just said to him before they had dinner the second time. Just been really, really honest. And I think if, you know what, if he couldn't handle that, then he didn't realize what a great friend he just missed out on.
So she's not supposed to date him for 50 years to spare him from
the breakup.
That he might connect to the fact he couldn't get hard that first
time. I think she should have just been like, listen, we need to have a really, really brutally honest conversation. Your brain is going to think that it's because your dick didn't work. And I want to let you know that's not the case. She should have done that.
Your fingers worked, your tongue worked, your forearm worked, everything else worked.
But I'm concerned that you will think that this is why. Basically, everything she just said to us, she should have said to him, not us. And then said, by the way, I think you're really great. Want to grab a bite?
Right.
But now she's done it this way. And the problem with that is now he's going to – no man wants to be pitied or felt sorry for. And now he's going to think, rightfully so, that she went to dinner with him because she pitied him. And that's a way, way bigger mistake than the previous one.
That's really smart. The thing I always tell guys in a situation like this is accept rejection gracefully. Learn to accept rejection gracefully. Mm-hmm. Even embrace it, because if somebody doesn't want to be with you, they're not somebody you should be wasting your time on. But also, that person from whom you have accepted rejection gracefully has friends, is a part of a social network that you may intersect with again later. And that person, if you accepted their rejection gracefully and some friend of theirs is interested in you, is going to vouch for you.
Oh, absolutely. Because you don't want the opposite, because we do that really well.
Right. If you're a big fucking baby and you have a meltdown because a woman said no and didn't want to date you and tried to end it gracefully and compassionately and you freaked out like a fucking toddler.
Right.
And then some friend of hers might be interested in you or show her your picture on Tinder and she's going to say no.
Yeah.
You want her to say, you know what? We hooked up and he wasn't for me, but he was a great guy.
Yeah, that's, you know, and you missed out on potentially a really awesome friend, which is kind of the situation these two sound like, although there might not be chemistry, perhaps on either side. You know what? Maybe he's thinking the same thing, because let's go back to the fact his dick didn't work. It could be for any number of reasons, but maybe he's thinking the exact same thing. Oh, God, I don't want her to think she's pretty or that there's something wrong with her. How great would it have been if they had this really open and honest conversation and they both went, oh my God, I'm so glad you said it. Let's go grab a burger.
So Stormy Daniels, it's so great to have you actually in our podcasting studio. Can you hang around for a couple more questions?
Absolutely.
Are you in a band? That's so cool. What do you play? Awesome. Do you guys have a website I can check out? No? What's the matter with you? You have to have a website. But I have some good news for you. Building a website does not have to be tedious or unpleasant. It can be easy, and with Squarespace, it can actually be fun. Squarespace makes it a breeze to crank out a beautiful, professional-looking website or blog or even an online store. They have templates that were created by world-class designers that you can just drop in and it looks good right away. And they have built-in e-commerce so you can sell stuff. There's nothing to patch or upgrade, and if you need help, they have 24/7 support. You can make it yourself so easily and make it stand out with Squarespace. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That helps us out here at the Lovecast. So just do it. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a late 20s gay man from the West Coast. And I have a question about good communication etiquette for casual hookups. I recently met a guy at a party. I was like moderately interested and we ended up coming back to my house and having sex. He's a nice guy and we ended up exchanging phone numbers and he was texting me pretty frequently right after for the first few days. And so I thought maybe he was coming on a bit strong. So I communicated that I wasn't feeling really strong romantic feelings, but maybe occasionally hanging out and hooking up would be in the cards from my perspective. And he reacted a bit defensively and said like that he wasn't thinking of anything serious and wasn't sure exactly why I had this feeling. So, but I communicated sort of like how I was feeling, and I think he understood. Since then, in the like 2 weeks after, I've received like 3 to 4, perhaps 5 text messages following up on my offer to occasionally hook up. And I don't know exactly how to broach it because I felt like because of the frequency, whatever interest I had has kind of evaporated. And so last time he texted me, I just started to slowly disengage, waiting a little bit longer to respond, and then also letting him know that I was busy that week. If he texts me again, I was thinking of maybe saying something a little stronger that like I'm not interested anymore, but I haven't seen him since that encounter, so I don't know exactly how to broach it. Like maybe saying that there's no chemistry wouldn't make too much sense because I haven't seen him more than once. Any thoughts, Dan, would be greatly appreciated.
This is very similar. Mm-hmm. This is someone who isn't interested in this person they hooked up with once for whatever reason, and you don't have to hook up with anybody more than once for whatever reason.
Right.
And just not saying it.
Yeah, you don't have to have a reason.
No, you don't.
No means no thing. But you know what's great, I have to say? Your listeners are so kind.
Well, these two, we get some.
Oh, okay. These are nothing like folks. The people who contact me. You want to trade?
I see the people who contact you on Twitter. I have my haters. I get some hate mail daily, not like the high fire position you found yourself in. But yeah, I like to think that if people listen to my show, they get better at this shit. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the hand-wringing around, I don't want to hurt this person's feelings by telling them the truth. And then they wind up drawing something out forever. And that's, you know, the cliche, ripping the band-aid off slowly.
That's what I was going to say. That's the same.
Is always worse. So he should just say.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you can already tell he's asking what he thinks he should do, but I can tell you he already knows. You could tell. He wants us to say it's okay.
It's okay
it's
to
okay.
tell someone no.
Yes.
Absolutely, it's okay.
But
to
it's
tell
even better
no.
to say no thank you.
That's true. It is even better to say no thank you. And people always hesitate because they don't want to inflict hurt. They don't want to be at that moment where they're really pricking someone with a pin and not a prick and it hurts and they maybe draw, you know, symbolic blood and, you know, someone's in pain and you put them there and people delay that moment and then the pain is worse.
Right. And nobody likes to be rejected. So you might be causing some pain, but you know what I have to point out as well that is a problem with a lot of these is their text messages.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the sign of a bigger problem is that people can't communicate anymore because everything's done via text. Like I can't tell you how many times like people meet on these apps and all of their communication is done with their finger on text messages and then they can't have a real conversation even on the phone. So
people don't make phone calls anymore.
No, they don't. And they don't know how to talk to each other in person. So I think a bigger problem here is that the tone of a text can be interpreted wrong, but most importantly, it can be interpreted however the person holding it wants to. So if they're already feeling insecure or rejected, it's going to read more aggressive or more hurtful or cruel than it would if it was said face to face.
Or if they're engaged in what I call dickful thinking.
Yes.
Instead of wishful thinking, they're dickful thinking. They might interpret your...
The opposite. Reading
the opposite
too much
way.
Into it.
Right. That your text message where you're trying to seem like you're disengaging or maybe not that interested, they're infusing with interest and desire because they're engaged in dickful thinking. Also twatful thinking, also a thing.
Right. And then they just overanalyze everything as well. Oh my God, he didn't get back to me instantly because... He doesn't like me. Oh, he didn't get back to me instantly because he's playing hard to get and he wants me to. No, maybe he was just taking a poop.
He found a copy of The Rules by the Rules Girls lying around from 20 years ago in one of his aunt's apartment and is trying to like pique my interest by not responding.
Right. I guess in a nutshell, you don't need permission to say no. You don't need permission to tell someone you're not interested. Prolonging it is crueler than ripping the Band-Aid off. And most importantly, please go out and talk to people. Like interacts like humans, not machines.
You also don't need permission to ask a direct question. The guy on the other side of this exchange is free to ask, look, are you interested or not?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not interested, please say so. You know, sometimes I think we talk about people accepting rejection gracefully. Sometimes you have to invite rejection gracefully.
Right.
You have to say to someone, look, if the answer is no, you can say no. Knowing that people have a hard time saying no. If you're wondering, like, why are they doing this to me? Why are they, you know, sending me these messages or not responding quickly? Are they interested? Are they not? You can ask that as a direct question. Look, if you're not interested, you can tell me and I'm not going to, like, be a baby about it.
I'm not going to blow your bunny.
Yeah, I'm not going to blow your bunny. I'm not going to show up at your house. I'm not going to have a fit. There are 3.5 billion other men on the planet whose dicks I can suck. What's up?
All right. Exactly.
That was just a little bit of the convo I had with Stormy. Stormy takes more questions, and she and I continue to give more answers on the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. Go there now for more Stormy.
Hey, Dan. I am calling with a question. My best friend from college recently decided to drop their she, her pronouns and basically has switched over to just identifying as completely non-binary, or rather coming out that way. Now, we've been close friends for a long time, but we don't live in the same city. And so actually this weekend was the first time I've seen them in several years, actually. And I had the hardest time switching back over to using exclusively they, their pronouns instead of continuing to gender them with she, her pronouns. They were really gracious about it and basically said, hey, you know, I know you're not purposely trying to do this. It's just something you're getting used to. And they're right. But I'm wondering if you have any tips on how to train my brain to switch over to use the correct pronouns for my friend.
I was Danny in grade school and then became Dan in adulthood, and everybody in my life seemed to be able to make that shift pretty seamlessly. My mother was Mrs. Savage, then she married this nice guy with a different last name, and then she was Mrs. Sobiesk, and all of us adult children who shared the last name with our mother for decades, all of our lives, we were able to make that shift, although we reserved the right to call her Ma Savage at times. You can make this shift. It can be a little confusing, the they, them, singular pronoun in certain instances. It's not confusing at all, and people use it all the time. And the plural they is common in English. Go to your doctor. Ask them what they think you should do about that sore on your genitals. People say things like that. They don't stumble over it. It just flows. When are they coming to dinner? When you mean one person, that can be confusing to other people in the room who are listening to you. Like, they are coming to dinner? How many play settings are we setting? I thought you said there was just three of us tonight. There are three of us. They are coming. They use they, them pronouns, but they are just one person. That can be confusing. It just takes a little time to get used to it and a little effort. So you ask how you can get there. Practice, practice, practice. And it helps that your friend isn't a rage bomb, anxious to blow up in your face every time you stumble over this change. It's going to take you some time to get used to it. It's going to take you some time to think they, them when you are speaking of or speaking to someone you used to regard as she, her. They're transitioning at the moment. So are you. They want your understanding and your compassion and your patience as they transition, as they're coming out. And they should extend to you the same courtesy.
Hi, Dan. I'm a bisexual woman in my early 20s living in the Midwest, and I've got a couple of questions for you regarding my roommate. Firstly, I'm having a hard time with her because she's quite clingy, almost possessive. She lacks normal adult roommate boundaries. For instance, she gets mad if I do things like stay out late with friends without checking in with her. She randomly will crawl into bed with me at night, and it even went so far that she demanded I FaceTime her every day while I was out of state to visit family. She jokes a little bit too often that she feels like we're dating, to the point that her coworkers, some of which who have never even met me, refer to me as her spouse or significant other. And as a person who identifies as bi, or maybe it's just a fucking human, I sometimes wonder if she actually has feelings for me that she maybe isn't conscious of or won't acknowledge just because of how possessive she gets over me. And secondly, she's trying to set me up with one of her coworkers apparently, but keeps doing things that seemingly sabotage it. Like, she invites him over to our apartment without giving me any sort of heads up. But will expect me to drop everything or get out of bed and hang out with them. A couple nights ago, she not only invited him over, but much to my surprise and frankly irritation, upon waking up the next morning, had let him stay the night. To add to that, he slept in her bed with her, despite the fact that we have a futon, and she was wearing a lingerie type of nightgown. And it's really not as if they're close friends, you know, who've known each other for a long time and can just share a bed. But in any case, it just feels like she's playing some sort of game, and I don't know how to address this or, you know, my first issue that I mentioned with her. I know I should say something, but I also don't want it to be uncomfortable or have her get hostile, as we still have 9 months or so left in our lease.
Break your lease. In 9 months, this nut is going to be wearing your skin as a house dress. Get the fuck out of there. Stop playing. When she comes into your room, tell her not to come the fuck in your room. Put a lock on your door. She's violating your boundaries by crawling into bed with you in the middle of the night. She's violating your boundaries by suggesting to others or allowing others to assume that you guys are girlfriends when you are not. She's making completely unreasonable demands on your time and for your attention. And you don't want to make her feel bad. You don't want to have a confrontation. So you're not pushing back the way you ought to push back. Maybe you're afraid of her. I would be afraid of her. I would be breaking that fucking lease and moving the fuck out of that apartment, even if it meant I had to pay rent for a little while on that apartment while I couch surfed in a few other apartments while I arranged to find a new roommate, or she arranged to find a new roommate who would be more comfortable having their skin worn as a house dress in 9 months. So be it. But yeah, you got to get the fuck out of there. I'm not saying your roommate is definitely going to kill you if you stay, but this is only going to get worse, and she's only going to get needier and clingier. And right now, every signal you've sent, anytime she's said jump, you've said how high. You haven't even waited to say how high. You've just leapt into the air as high as you possibly can. And so she's going to keep sinking those hooks in deeper because it's working, because you're allowing it to work, because you want to avoid a confrontation that you cannot actually avoid. If you're going to remain roommates for 9 more months, you have to tell her this all stops now. You are not her friend. You are not her girlfriend. You are her roommate. She does not crawl into bed with you in the middle of the night. She cannot be angry at you if you decide to stay out all night with your actual friends. And when you're away with your family, you don't have to report back in because you're not in a relationship. Your names are on a lease, not a marriage certificate. All right, before we get to listener comments, a few listener tweets. Sporty Nerds tweets about episode 630 of the Savage Lovecast. We are a one-dick couple of swingers, but that's because he's straight and she's in it for the pussy. We sometimes have to dispel this misperception. Insecurity has nothing to do with it. You know who's insecure, Sporty Nerds goes on? The people who can't accept our dynamic. Laura Koch tweets, my beloved cousin and I realize calling fake Dan Savage on the Savage Lovecast is the only solution to me finding out my partner doesn't like cranberry sauce 4 years into our relationship. I'm sorry, that is a DTMFA level offense in my book. Cranberry sauce is fucking awesome. And anybody who doesn't want to put that in their mouth doesn't get to put me in their mouth. Dump him. And finally, Hillary Weissman tweets, loved listening to men rave about their vasectomies, how affordable they were, some obtained at Planned Parenthood, and how they improved their sex lives with their female partners, sans painful IUD insertions or debilitating libido-crushing hormones on the hashtag Savage Lovecast. Glad you enjoyed it, Hillary. Thank you for tweeting about it. If you want me to read one of your tweets on a future show, be sure to hashtag your tweets about the Savage Lovecast with hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now some listener comments.
Hi, Dan. This is in response to the guy who called on episode 630 about the bad first-time sex experience. He sounds just so sweet and so caring and thoughtful, and that is going to attract two types of people. It's going to attract the type of people who want to take advantage of him, and it's going to attract the type of people who just want to love him and care for him. My first sex experience was absolutely horrific, but now I kind of look back on it and I feel like I got that out of the way, and it made me really aware of all the red flags that are out there. You're going to find somebody who treats you like the sensitive, sweet person that you sound like you are. So hang in there.
Hi, this is for the lovely young man that's on the show. He was had a regretted first experience, and Dan is talking to him, and he asked for the listeners to call in with their less than perfect first experiences. And I want to say there are so many of them out there. My first experience was absolutely terrible. Like you, I was in a get it over with. I chose someone that I didn't know anything at all about. I had a terrible, terrible experience, and even in the moment realized, there, that's done. It's behind me. And it's good to set the bar nice and low because there's only up to go from there. So it's not going to define your sex life. It's just a time. But I will say something about giving the gift that you said, and I'm about giving your gift away. You know what gift you have? You have the gift of your precious, wonderful self. And you get to give that as many times as you want to. And whoever is lucky enough to get that gift of you will treasure it. No matter how many times it's been given to how many other people, it is always precious. It is always special. It is always wonderful. It has nothing to do with how often you've had sex. It has nothing to do with where your dick has been or who's been in your body. It is you, yourself. That's the gift. And you're going to be able to give it to someone who's really going to appreciate it. Good luck to you in the dating world.
Hi, this is a longtime listener who just wants to tell everyone to give yourself the gift of the Magnum subscription for the holidays. You deserve it. If you're a longtime listener to Dan like I am, the episodes are so much longer. There's great interviews. You're not hearing the same commercials over and over, although I guess I am sad to not hear Dan talk about it today. And there's just so much great content. So if you're on the fence, it's so cheap and it's so worth it. And you'll get so much more of Dan's A, which is what we all want.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. We have some gift suggestions for you. Know somebody who listens to the micro, think they need to hear the Magnum, think they'd enjoy the Magnum? The Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, twice as long and no ads. You can gift a subscription at savagelovecast.com. Just hit gift. If somebody on your list already is a Magnum subscriber, we've got GGG and Fuck First mugs available at savagelovecast.com as well. Just click on shop. And if anybody on your list, and here's hoping everybody on your list, wants to see that motherfucker impeached already, go to itmfa.org where you can get Impeach the Motherfucker Already buttons, hats, mugs, lapel pins, hoodies, and more at itmfa.org. All right, follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Stormy Daniels, who is awesome at giving sex advice, and we can't wait to have her back on the show. Follow Stormy Daniels at Stormy Daniels. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. We'll all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.